Good evening and welcome to What the Buck. I am Old School, coming to you live from Studio 76. We have no music because I suck and I still haven't chopped up Franco's anthem for our intro and outro yet because, well, life happened and that's what happens sometimes. So I apologize for no music, but that means you guys get the dulcet tones of Old School and the crew here. We're actually short one right now. Mark Cook and Nuck Nuck, who is his alter ego, are both late, as I mentioned in the chat room. Nuck Nuck had to see his quote-unquote business associate on the way over there. I don't really know what that means. Chris, do you know what that means, a business associate of Nuck Nuck's?
Hopefully he was picking me up some more Two Henry's beer, I hope.
I don't know about all that, but at any rate, it's good to have you guys here. I see our boy Peter is in the chat room live from Germany, which is phenomenal. We thank you guys for in the chat room. And by the way, Peter, I will make sure I give Mark his gift from you tonight, which I have not given him in like 3 weeks because I suck. So, as you heard on mic number two over here, it's actually mic number three on the board, but Chris Fisher of Buck's Brief Podcast fame is back with us tonight to have some more fun. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm wonderful. You're the only person who can get me to drive 40 minutes out to where you say where you're from. So
Valrico, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to have to edit that one. This is the PG-13 version. Take a note to edit that out.
That Tito's is kicking in already.
I'm actually literally taking a note to edit that out because this is, you know, we're going to do two things tonight. You guys spoke. You guys like the split process, so we'll do our normal PG-13 show after I edit that drop there, so apologies. And then we will cut the show, and then we will get things back going. I know Cheryl's in the chat room. She's like, already? I'm like, yeah, well, we are drinking Tito's. Big shout-out to our sponsors, of which Tito's is one. We appreciate the fine folks over at Tito's Vodka. We, of course, appreciate Bill Curry Ford. We were at the Super Fan Bash with Christy Vinette and the crew last night. Got a chance to see Jameis and Allie and Donovan and do a little bit of a Q&A with them. TJ Reeves was there. It was a good time. Some fans out there having a good time. I do want to make a shout. I see my man Kevin's in the chat room. I want to say happy birthday to the Marines, 241. So Semper Fi to you guys. Thank you for all the service. And by the way, Veterans Day to everyone who has served. Thank you for the sacrifice. There's no words that can thank you appropriately. But we do thank you for your sacrifices, not just in time, but in effort. Oh, my God. We got Mark Cook, Nuck Nuck, and the little Cookman in the house. It's going to be an interesting broadcast, and I will let all of these guys get settled. But I did thank Bill Curry Ford, Steakhouse Elite. We thank Tito's Vodka, Pepin Distributing, Bud Light. Good people all around, so it's nice to have all those folks on board. So we're going to get things going here. I'm going to let Mark get settled. He's going to give us some information, I'm sure, because he's always got his fingers on the pulse of the Buccaneers, as we like to say. And it's actually, also Coca-Cola. Thank you, Cheryl. I don't have them on my normal template, but definitely we couldn't do what we do without the folks at Coca-Cola. Their Go Gold campaign was very successful, so definitely appreciate the guys there. We will be tailgating in this week. For anyone who's going to tweet me or text me or send smoke signals or a carrier pigeon between now and Sunday and ask, hey, are you guys tailgating this week? Here's a hint. Yes. We always tailgate. We're always at the same spot. If you have any questions about the tailgate, feel free to go to whatthebuck.net, and I'm going to tell you, it's kind of hidden. Click on the tailgate link, and then you'll get all the information. There's even a flyer that our man Jay puts together with all of the data that tells you when to be there, what to bring, what we're collecting. This month is all about Movember. These poor gentlemen in the room are seeing the ludicrous mustache that I'm rocking right now.
I like it.
Oh, I appreciate that, Chris. I'm sure Mark will have something bad to say about it. There you go, of course. Mark is like the pig pen of emotions. He walks around with a dark cloud over his head. Fortunately for the cloud, it's only about 5 feet off the ground, so it's not much.
5'8" off the ground.
5'8". You see, I'm like you. I'm 5'11" and right. I cling to that half.
Oh, you got to have the half.
That half inch matters.
In a lot of different parts.
Lots of people say. In
different parts, too.
Hey, I've already dropped something. I've got to go back and edit, by the way. So I'll edit for the PG-13. You guys won't get it.
What was it? Screw you, Cook, because you're late?
No, not at all. I was nice about you. Well, Nuck Nuck had to meet his business associate, whatever that means. I've been telling the people about that. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, Nuck Nuck's got some shady dealings, I think. I'm a little concerned about him.
Well, at any rate, Mark, welcome to the show. We got Mark Cook from PewReport.com right across from me. We were just introducing Chris Fisher from Buck's Brief Podcast. He was saying I'm the only guy who can get him to drive 45 minutes to come do a podcast.
Yeah, I would not do that. No, if I was more than 20 minutes away, it would not happen.
I understand that. I appreciate you living in my backyard for the last 3 months. It's very, very useful. It makes this much easier for us to execute. The folks in Bucks Nation or whatever the collective is called. I don't really like the nation.
That's a competitor's website.
Oh, SB Nation, right? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
But the website's Bucks Nation, I think.
Oh, okay, whatever. The Buccaneers fans at large, if that's better, are definitely wondering about what's going on with the health of the squad. So can you give us an update from One Buck Place as to what's going on with the health of the squad, Mark?
Well, they're getting healthier. And, you know, listen, Doug Martin's been able to practice the last couple of days. And that's huge for this football team because they're looking at the second half of the season as a reset button, right? You know, we're playing PlayStation 1 as we used to in our younger days, and we would go down 13, 14, nothing. And we would say, screw this, and push the reset button. Well, that's fortunately, the Buccaneers can't do that because the eight games prior counted. But they can start over, look at it as a new season, and see where they are. 3-5 the first half. Love to be 5-3, I think, in the second half. I think most Buccaneer fans after the first half of the season would be pretty pleased with that. But they are getting a little healthier. Robert Ayers obviously came back. Hasn't done a lot, but he's still not 100%, and he may not be on that ankle. But having Doug Martin back, I think, is going to be big. I still say it's 50-50 at best that he plays. And even if he does play, I don't know what kind of workload he's going to get. So it's going to be the Mike James, Peyton Barber, Russell Hansborough show. And, you know, maybe some Doug sprinkled in there. But it's crucial they get Doug back. We talked to Doug in the locker room today, and he was devastated when he had that little setback. Probably pushed it a little too hard right before the Carolina game. And, you know, it was really rough on him because he thought he was going to be back. And as you guys know with hamstring injuries, you know, first of all, how it happened is crazy. I mean, he was going about 40%, Dirk said, you know, when he made his cut in that Arizona game. It wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't like, you know, he was sprinting down the field on a break open where you see a lot of hamstrings happen. So, you know, how they happen, why they happen, who knows? Why the setback happened, who knows? And who knows how healthy it's going to be the rest of the year. But they need Doug Martin back. And, you know, we tend to, you know, you and I talked about this a lot, Derek, in the offseason about the whole dime a dozen thing that people said. Again, if they're dime a dozen, then Peyton Barber would be second leading rusher in the NFL right now, or, you know, whoever. And it's the fact is, it's just not the case. Doug Martin is an elite running back when he's healthy in this league. Staying healthy has been a problem for him, but I can't blame a guy for an injury. It's not like he came in, you know, 20 pounds overweight training camp. He came in the exact same shape that he came in last year, where he was able to stay healthy for the whole season. So it was just a thing of bad luck. Mike Evans out of the concussion protocol. That's good news for the Buccaneers. He'll be on the field. Joe Holly looks like he's going to play. Shepard, I don't know.
Is that guy made of iron?
Yeah, he gets hurt every game, knocked out. You think he's done for the season. Three plays later, he's back in there.
Absolutely.
So Joe's back. You know, Shep, I don't think Shep's going to play. I can't remember. And in fact, I just did the injury report a little while ago. Pamphil's not playing, no.
Okay. All right. So they're going to slide Evan Smith over to left guard, and then Holly will be at center, and then the backup will be Benenock?
Benenock probably will be the backup there, yeah.
Okay. So that's scary.
Well, yeah, because here's my concern with that, because if you've got your backup center now sliding in as your starting left guard, and Holly's been coming out of the game and missing three
snaps. He's going to miss a series at least.
So then you're sliding, I'm assuming, Smith over then to center, and
Benenock
to left guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, if Joe would have been hurt a little bit, I mean, not been able to go this week, then you start looking at, you know, do they promote Josh Allen off the practice squad? Who else? Gottschalk, maybe? But he's more of a center, I think, than a guard. But listen,
I don't know why Chehalis doesn't get a chance in here. He's our sixth guy coming off the bench. He's played, I think, three of five positions on the line. And in the last two games, he's played relatively well.
I think it's, you know, I think, and I may be wrong. You can probably tell me a little bit more about this. I think the guard position maybe is a little more wear and tear knees wise, especially if you're pulling the guy. Gosder just doesn't have very good knees. He's a guy that's you know, he's serviceable when needed, but, you know, I don't know that he could go 16 games. I was just talking to him this week about it. You know, it's tough, you know, and the older he gets, the tougher it is. So, you know, it takes longer for him to recover and things. I don't know. Maybe it's harder to play tackle than guard on the knees, but I'm guessing that, you know, the fact that you are going to pull at times and it's a little more. It's a little more battles going on in that interior from
guard.
There's also
more opportunities to get hit by friendly fire, right? Yeah. You're going to get a bunch of crap around your legs. They all wear cages.
Right.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. And what was funny, as I was telling Chris, I was watching this thing from Ledyard NFL tonight, or this afternoon. They did a breakdown of Ali Marpet. And I'll get the actual Twitter handles for both of the cats that were on this video thing. They did a great job with the NFL All-22 footage. They did like 18 minutes or so on Ali Marpet, and they were very clear. They're like, listen, most people don't get a chance to watch him. The Bucks haven't been particularly good. He's out of a tier three school. But if you are not watching Ali Marpet play football, you don't get to watch good offensive line play. And they walk through what he's doing. And you also got a chance to see the sort of counter story to this, which is Donovan Smith has not been very good this year, and it sucks. They're both nice guys. They're roommates as rookies. I got a chance to see him last night at the Super Fan Bash. I think Donovan Smith has the ability to be very good, but you could see now. Admittedly, they play different positions, right? But when you're watching it, anytime that the video review was talking about how good a play was that Ali had made, the play broke down because maybe Donovan missed the block he was supposed to make.
You know, and I really thought Donovan was going to be, you know, take a step this year. Certainly his second year in the league.
Yep.
You know, Ali has made that step, I think. He's still not where he wants to be and where the team wants him to be. There's still room to improve, but he's playing really good football right now. Donovan, though, I don't know what the deal is with that. And we've talked about it. Listen, and we got a lot of debate on our Pewter Report message boards about, you know, and a lot of hate for Donovan that, you know, he's a right tackle, not a left tackle. And ultimately, that may be a better spot for him.
That's originally where I thought in the draft that that's where they were going to play him. I was kind of surprised there was a shift to left tackle.
But the only option is to throw DeMar over there at this point. And, you know, if the Buccaneers end up with a top 15 draft, where you're going to find impact day one franchise left tackles, again, there's a difference between a number five offensive line pick and a second round draft pick like Donovan Smith. And Donovan is a first round draft pick if he's got a little bit better feet. His feet aren't as heavy. He's not the most fleet of foot. And that hurts him and has hurt him. And that's why he was a second round pick, because he's got the size. He's got the strength. He's got a huge wingspan. You know, he's a smart guy. But you know, he's not, a Walter Jones, you know, on his feet. Joe Thomas, I don't know, just pick a few guys. Paul Gruber, for that matter.
This isn't the sexy talk that a lot of fans want to talk about, but it's important, right? Your foundation or your trenches. And you point out Donovan's got all the physical attributes you look for. One of the things I talked about last year was his internal clock was too short, right? The college clock is shorter than the pro clock. You've got to hold your blocks longer in the NFL game, especially when you have a quarterback like Jameis who's going to extend the play.
Exactly.
You can't just block for your 3.5, 4 seconds and consider it good. You block until you hear the whistle and until maybe another second after that and try to get a penalty. And he doesn't do that. And when I was watching the tape, he also, despite having all the physical accoutrement, right, he doesn't play very mean, right? He plays a very, and I don't mean this to say he's soft, because he's not. This is a big cat, very strong,
right?
But he doesn't play as aggressively as I think you need out of position. If you throw a spin move on Donovan Smith, you're going to get through him because his punch isn't developed to where it needs to be.
Right.
It glances right off him, as opposed to Ali's punch and even DeMar's punch. If they get their hands under your tits, right, it's over.
Yeah. And going back to what I was going to say, I don't know where – I mean, I don't know when he would move to right tackle, because you've got to draft him. You've got to find one. And let's be honest, he's not playing bad enough to where if you end up with a 15 – number, you know, a top 10 or 15 pick, that you're going to go get an offensive lineman. You've got more pressing needs on this football team. And
about six more pressing needs.
You know, and again, finding a perennial all-pro type guy for the left tackle position isn't impossible. Buccaneers had one. His name was Donald Penn. I mean – and he was an undrafted guy. So, and they got him off a practice squad from the Vikings, I believe. So, but those are rare feats for 10, 15 year, you know, franchise guys that, you know, you can count on every year. But you know, Donovan, again, he's not playing bad enough to where, you know, the team's freaking out saying, we got to go, you know, we got to figure out how to get a top 10 tackle in the draft. They just have too many needs right now, and they're going to have to just hope that he continues to develop and gets a little bit better. I hate that at times they've got to use a tight end over there to give him a little bit of help at times, because that takes, you know, one guy out of the equation. You know what I mean? That changes another potential receiver you could have on the
absolutely.
Field or something like that. But again, I'm still a Donovan Smith fan. But in the words of Dennis Green, he is who we thought he is. I mean, he's not Walter Jones. He's not going to be. But you know, he can be serviceable, and he's been serviceable.
The question becomes, can he be coached up? What's his ceiling?
Yeah.
Right, because we all know that Ali has not gotten to the ceiling yet. He's still playing great football. The question becomes, are Donovan's physical tools such that someone can light that fire, can get him to elevate his game, right, and play at that next level? Because you're right. I mean, the reality of the situation is the needs that we have elsewhere are far more significant than needs at left tackle right now.
You know why Donald Penn was a good athlete, and even DeMar Dotson? You know, Donald's a big basketball player. He still plays in, like, summer rec leagues and things like that. I don't know that Donovan is much of a basketball player. He may be, for all I know, but I haven't heard of that, in other words. And footwork, man. Footwork is so crucial for these guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's the difference between being a, you know, an okay tackle and a guy that's going to be talked about in the Pro Bowl world eventually. And we'll see if that can get any better. I don't know.
So, Derek, you mentioned that video breakdown of Ali Marpet. So the two guys that folks want to follow on Twitter, I follow both these guys, NFL draft guys. I think they're through the Scouting Academy, which has got guys like Lewis Riddick and I know Mike Martz and Dan Habman, guys like that, running these guys through that. But it's at Veteran Scout is Brandon Thorne. And then who you mentioned, Derek, is John Ledyard at Ledyard NFL Draft. So
I retweeted
it from at BBP Chris, so folks can jump on my Twitter feed, and we've got the, it's a YouTube video, I believe, right?
Yep, that's it is. It's a YouTube video. It's an embedded YouTube video. It's very, very good. So if you have the time and the interest, definitely get out there and take a look at that, because it's good. It's football porn. If you like football, you'll like watching the video, because they walk through and explain both in the run block as well as in the pass block. They also talk about some things we talk about on the show. Like, you'll see the difference in zone blocking versus man blocking and the pass off and the things we talk about a lot when we start breaking down individual plays. But let's get out of the trenches go ahead, Chris.
I had a question on Mark, because I don't want to go too quick from the Doug Martin conversation, because it seems like we've had guys that have been practicing coming back from injuries, but they're not playing on Sunday. So Derek and I were talking about before you got here, Clint McDonald's practiced how many weeks now?
4 weeks.
And he hasn't played. Right. So I'm not looking at this Sunday and expecting Doug to be there. To me, it would be a surprise, but are the coaches, this coaching staff, holding back on rushing guys back in on Sundays? Because if they're practicing, aren't they playing?
With hamstrings, and that's what Clinton has too. I think that's the key there. I mean, if Clinton had a shoulder, a pectoral, I don't know, a hip, you know, he probably played the last 2 weeks. But in particular that position, well, really both of those, you know what? There's not a position on the football field where a hamstring isn't going to be crucial. I mean, maybe you can get away with having a sore hamstring as an offensive lineman, but again, you got to have a good base. You got to be able to drive. So, but really, Clinton, who's going to be in the interior, who's going to be getting battled and beat up quite a bit, and trying to get push and leverage, you know, I think the hamstring is really crucial. Again, if it's any other position, I think Clinton plays. We saw Ayers finally come back with that ankle. It's not going to be 100% probably the rest of the year. But he's able to gut it out. But if he had had a hamstring, he'd probably still be out as well.
Yeah, hamstring and groin are both tough, right? Because they're soft tissue injuries. They're constantly fired. There's no rest position for them, right? So even when you're in your stance, all your stance and starts affected, your power, your explosion, everything is impacted by both of those areas. And when a couple of people are like, well, what's going on? Who let them push it? Why are our trainers not getting this done? Some of this is just physiology, man. Mm-hmm, yeah. These are soft tissue injuries. Everyone heals at a different pace.
And that's what Dirk said, too, a couple weeks ago. He goes, look, man, I'm no doctor. I'm no scientist here. But if we knew what caused soft tissue injuries, and there's a lot of things that teams are doing now, and Mike Evans talked about this with trainers that he worked on his own in the offseason for soft tissue, but it's still not it's not like there's a pill you take and, okay, I'm not going to have a hamstring injury. Even the stuff that Mike did, so far it's worked out fine, doesn't mean he's not going to blow out a hamstring on his first pass play this week. It still can happen. Now, and again, these are some new training kind of things that Mike Evans is doing. And again, they're not really proven yet, but maybe 5 years down the road, what he did this offseason is the standard for guys. But they're trying, and the Buccaneers, I can't say they bring in a lot of people, but I know that their staff, their medical staff, you know, is willing to look at a lot of different things. They're doing the freezing thing now.
Yeah, the cryo chamber.
You know, they've got the underwater treadmills that they run these guys on. They take the weight off these guys. You know, they're kind of up on their feet dangling. You know, all of those things. Those are things that Doug has been doing to try and rehab his. But again, look, I mean, you and I can both suffer the exact same injury. We can trip and sprain our ankle going down your steps. It may take me longer than you or you longer than me. It's just the way our bodies are.
I'll give Dirk, my buddy, Diamond Dallas Page's number. They'll hook up the team with some DDP.
Some DDP yoga?
DDP yoga.
Dude, Pat Donovan just got a twin somewhere because he loves some DDP yoga.
Yeah. Hey, you know, and this team is not above yoga for these guys. This team is not above. They have a chiropractor come in once a week. They have a massage therapist in every week for these guys that can utilize them.
There's not a limit. And in the chat, everyone is bringing up all these things they could do. When I went in there, I don't know, God, it was 5 years ago, I think, I went on my One Buck tour, and I saw the game-ready machines. And these are, you know, with all the gear they had on them, probably $8,000 to $10,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. They had 24 of them, right? This is compressed air and ice slurry, essentially, that you can put on different joints. They're phenomenal. If you've ever used them, they are a miracle, right? They were cutting edge then. This team is trying all they can do. Injuries are very strange, guys. We can't predict them. That's why I always bristle at the concept of an injury pattern. But at any rate, let's move on to the Falcons game. And I'm going to start with you, Mark, because obviously with Pewter Report, you've done some work on this. You guys probably got some articles coming out about the Falcons game. This game went the way Chris sort of predicted. That first half was close, and then the Bucs couldn't keep up. What was your takeaway, your immediate takeaway from the Falcons game?
It was a case, in my opinion, and I asked Mike Smith about this today, is I just think this team ran out of gas, out of steam. I mean, they're limited, health-wise to a degree. They don't have a ton of depth. They're not going to sub out their cornerbacks, apparently, according to Dirk and Mike Smith. And, I asked Mike about it. He said, you know what? We get what we deserve. If we would have played better against the Raiders, we wouldn't have been on the field for 95 plays. We'd have been on the field for 65 plays, and maybe we do have more juice. He said it's a no-excuse league. But I've always, there's a fine line between reasons and excuses. And I don't know that if he would have said we ran out of gas is an excuse. I mean, bottom line is they did play an extra quarter down here in this heat, and it wasn't bad for the Raiders game. It certainly wasn't, a September-type game. But again, the human body, there's a reason the NFL plays every 7 days as opposed to Major League Baseball and these other sports that are back-to-back. I mean, the wear and tear on the body and the recovery time is a lot longer for football players. So, the Thursday night matchup after a five-quarter game, it was the worst possible scenario. And I think, in my opinion, that was my takeaway. This team got royally screwed out of a call that should have been reversed in the third quarter on that Julio Jones sketch. It's not even close. Found out from TJ Reeves, the sideline guy after the game, and who was actually furious about it as we were going back up the elevator after the press conferences. New York nor the replay official had the one that was on the big screen that we all saw.
Right.
Now, it makes you wonder why the guy can't turn around. He's looking at a 13-inch TV monitor under a hood. First of all, it's 2016, right? Why is this still the replay deal, a guy under a little hood looking at it? I prefer the college thing where you've got guys looking at actual TV screens and there's a couple guys looking and pointing at different angles and it coming down from somewhere else as opposed to an official going and putting his head inside a little booth and trying to see everything. But why, and I don't know if this is the Buccaneers, I don't know if this is the NFL, I don't know if this was CBS / NFL Network / NBC, whatever it was for that game, not providing it. But there was clearly an obvious replay on these, 9 million square foot screens that clearly showed the ball, hit the ground. This is something we've talked about. The NFL has yet to be able to come up with a true definition of what in the hell is a catch or not a catch. But why was that feed not available? Because I think had he saw that replay, then I think the call would have been went in the Buccaneers' favor.
I know that it used to be the case, and it apparently is not anymore based on what you just said, that the feed that we get in the stadium during a review is the feed that they have access to. If the team, home team, plays video feeds other than that, they are subject to penalty, up to $50,000. Now, that doesn't matter, and the Bucs did it a number of times when they thought it was worth putting up there. They thumbed their nose at the league and said, whatever, right?
Well, and maybe for whatever reason the league or the network was limited in providing that to the NFL. I don't think the Buccaneers did anything wrong in coming up with their own special angle, but for whatever reason, that particular one that we saw over and over on the big screen, according to TJ, and he got that, I believe, from Dirk, who the officials told him they didn't have that angle. For whatever reason, and I don't know what it is. But it just goes back to show you, we can blame Colin Kaepernick for all the troubles in the world, including Donald Trump being elected, if that's your feelings, TV ratings, whatever. Officiating is brutal. And hockey fans will tell you it's just as bad there, and baseball fans will tell you they can't come up with a strike zone. But I mean, obviously I watch football 90% of the time when I'm watching sports, so I think it's the worst in professional sports, and it's not gotten any better. It's actually gotten more of a gray area with some of these rules.
I've been in the NFL offices in New York. I had a buddy who worked in the officiating office, still goes around and is the guy up in the
Dean Blandino
travels around. No, not Dean.
Oh. And, Jerry Mark Bright.
I used to text him after on Mondays and say, "Can you send me the report card for the officials from this last weekend?"
Did he?
No, oh. I couldn't do that. Come on. Now.
I would love to see that. I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I won't interrupt because I'm more to get.
The time at that call, because I remember that. I just don't remember the quarter and the time that call happened. It was
third quarter, first drive.
Yeah, first drive.
Second set of downs.
So it's still a six-point game at that point.
Yeah,
it is still a six-point game. It's third and five.
They go down and score a touchdown.
Yeah, third and five. I see it right here from the 33.
The question I had when I watched it, and we can point at individual calls. We had, I think, 11 penalties for 85 yards. Of course, typically in bad times, we weren't able to force a punt at all throughout the game. That play, I think that the Atlanta people will argue that Julio, while the ball touched the ground, he maintained control by keeping it pinned against his hip. The ball looked like it moved to me, and that's supposed to be the difference. But that was one drive, admittedly. They went down there and drove. Then we get the ball back, and we do absolutely nothing with the ball in offense.
Right.
Right?
Green out.
And then they drive again. The third quarter, we had one drive. The most tired guy on the field was Brian Anger, who had to punt. That was the end of the game, right? That third quarter was the end of the game. The Falcons came out after the half and scored 27 unanswered points and commenced to stomp a mud hole in this team. Now, before Quan went out, Quan wasn't playing particularly well, and I want to bring this topic up to both of you, and I want to start with Chris.
Yeah.
We've been wondering all year what's going on with the defense. We know they have to learn the new scheme. We know that they're all getting used to it. We've been attacking the safeties with just a vigor and fervor that is probably due. But one thing that people have not been attacking very aggressively, at least directly, they've been asking questions, because you don't want to ever attack people that are considered really, really good. But Quan, and in this game, specifically Lavonte David, were absolutely terrible. Lavonte David was as bad as I've ever seen him play, and he compounded being bad by being apparently lazy jogging after the play. We used to call him loafs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still use loafs in the defensive room, but this linebacker play is terrible. The only guy that popped on film in the linebacking corps, and he wasn't in the game that much, I'm not sure what the play count was Smith, and it was when they would cheat him down to the line. If he comes off that edge as an extra rusher, he's good. Chris, what are you seeing on the film, that on the defense? If it's beyond linebackers, feel free to take it from there.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and Derek and I were talking about this before we started the show, but I thought the first four games in last year's season was some of the worst football that Lavonte David has ever played in his NFL career. And then he got better towards the end of the year. We were starting to see some of those splash plays. I thought Quan was pretty awful the first half of last year. Had a, you know, some games where he had some splash plays, but other than that, it's hit or miss. So a lot of that, you know, critique that people give the PFF and what they said about Quan last year and his missed tackles, if you watch the film, I mean, it was happening.
No, there's no doubt. And Quan did say, to his credit, this offseason, we asked him, or I did specifically, you know, I missed too many tackles last year. Yeah. I've got to get better at that. And I don't know that he has.
And this game particularly, and I'll focus just on some things that happened in the first half. And it's funny because the defense actually got a couple stops in the first half, or at least held them the field goals.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing is specifically from Lavonte. And if you watch the broadcast, and when I'm sitting there and I'm watching the game live, if the defensive line doesn't make a play, it's the safeties making a play or the corners making a tackle, especially in the running game. The linebackers are not making tackles.
Right.
So the things that showed up to me, one with Quan, and he's been doing this all year, is either hitting the wrong gap or taking bad angles. It was so apparent in this game with Lavonte David, bad angles. And what Derek mentioned about the loafing, I recall the Devontae Freeman, which should have been a 4-yard.
Third and 13, I think. And they dump it over the middle of the safety valve.
Yeah.
Should have been tackled for a 5-yard gain.
Mike talked about that specifically. I mean, that was a play that frustrated the hell out of him as defensive coordinator. He said this. It's a surrender play, essentially. You know, it's your last option. It's a little check down, and it goes for 17 or 18 yards or 22, whatever it ended up being. And he did say this. I found this interesting because Lavonte has not been on injury report that I can remember this year. And Mike, right off the bat, said he's been nicked up some this year. So that's something, you know, we need to look into maybe a little bit more. Because, again, you know, if somebody's watching that, what game was that? The Panthers game, John Gruden's last year, Monday Night Football, they would say, they could maybe say that Derek Brooks was loafing a little bit. But he was running on one leg. So if, and again, I'm not making excuses, it's just interesting to me that Mike Smith said he's been nicked up this year, and we haven't heard anything about that.
And again, where it shows up in the film is in the first quarter, not the fourth. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a loafing situation or you're tired, you would assume that would be toward the end of the game, not in the first quarter. So there could be something going on. I know you guys focused on PewterReport.com. Look at that. You know, throw those plugs.
Like
Eric Horchie, your writer, focused on what's different with Lavonte and why we're not seeing the tackle numbers and what he's been doing differently.
Well, Mike did say today, as we've talked about it a little bit, and I think Derek, you may have mentioned this, it's a different defensive style. This defense, Mike Smith's defense, is funneling more to the mic as opposed to the will, and which is completely foreign to Buccaneer fans because through Monty Kiffin, through Greg Schiano, even Raheem Morris, you know, your weak side linebacker was the guy they tried to funnel it to, and you try and free that up. Mike Smith's defense, for whatever reason, is doing that more with Quan. The problem is Quan isn't filling the holes, hitting the, you know, and not, you know, keeping his gap responsibility, whatever it is, and it's hurting this team because there's glaring, you know, misses. I mean, we've seen Quan so many times be in position, come rushing up, and just run himself out of the play, run right by the ball carrier, and you know, that goes back to Little League football. You get in position, you break down, and you know, and I love his aggressiveness, right? He wants to be a missile. He wants to be that guy that's going to, you know, clobber a guy in the hole. And he had a hit, I don't remember if it was this game or the Raiders game, where he completely laid a guy out, which is well and good, but that doesn't make up for
We didn't get extra 5 yards or some points out of that extra hard hit,
exactly,
did we?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
No, but your point is a really good one, and it shouldn't be lost, right? It's not just that they're guessing wrong in the gap or they're reading their keys wrong, because in some cases it looked like Levante is reading his keys wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There was a particular play off left tackle where he was reading – it looked like he was reading the left tackle who was going full flow right. It was a misdirection play. Now, that shouldn't really have been his key. His backfield should have been the key. And he ran straight over to the other side of the field, leaving – again, the safety is on the island. And listen, this isn't an apology tour for McDougal or Conti or Tandy or anyone else that comes into safety, because our safety play has been atrocious.
Savvy Piscatelli.
Hey, listen, get that guy on the horn, Tino, right? Because another thing we've got to open up, and you said that Mike brought up that one play. I want to hear if Mike discussed our complete and utter – and in show two, and I'm not sure if Mark's going to be here or Nuck-Nuck's going to be here, but I know Chris and I will be here. Nuck-Nuck will be here? All right.
He's finished up some business dealings.
Business, good.
Business.
Our inability to figure out how to cover a tight end on the seam is one of the most frustrating things I've ever seen. That Atlanta would have scored another 16 points probably, because they would have scored 2 touchdowns and then gone for a 2-point conversion for fun, I think.
Yeah.
Because people were just dropping touchdowns.
Again, Mike Smith is we talked about Dirk last year being that guy you want to listen to a press conference of. You want to listen to Mike Smith because he's a pretty open and honest guy, revealing that Levante has been nicked up a little bit this year. Two things. A lot of miscommunication still going on after 8 games.
That's key.
And I don't know if we can pin that on Quan. Quan obviously is making the calls from the mic position. And somebody asked him if that was only on Quan. He says, no, I mean, it's across the whole defense. We're not communicating well. And when you don't communicate well, you see those long splash plays. And what do they call them? They don't call them splash plays. I forgot what their term is. I'll think of it in a minute. But
Explosives,
yeah. And you see that. And Chris probably watches a little Florida State football like me. I know you don't, Derek. But that's been an issue with Florida State's defense. Miscommunication. Well,
I'm just kidding.
Pat will be able to verify this. But that's been a problem with Florida State's defense is communication. And getting calls in, getting guys set, everybody knowing what they're due before the ball gets snapped. And the Buccaneers have been caught out of position at times, not looking like – I mean, guys are still trying to make signals as the ball is being snapped, and that is a recipe for disaster. It doesn't matter if it's on the Pee Wee level or the NFL level. You've got to be prepared.
The problem I have with this miscommunication narrative, and I think it's true. I've seen it. We talked about it. It's in the notes. Everyone's seen it. They're talking about it in the chat room right now. There's a good, healthy conversation. By the way, thanks for joining the chat room live. If Quan's coming in early and he's the quarterback of the defense, we've been touting how great that is. He's going to be the Jameis Winston of the defense. He's working in the film room, and Mike Smith is in there early, and we're working on this stuff. Getting the defensive play call in there is not tough. Now, if you're going to try and play the game like the great Mikes of the day against the great Peyton Mannings of the day, where Peyton checks and you check on defense and all this stuff is going back and forth, yeah, I see that. That can happen. We're not doing that much.
No,
getting in a defense, Keekly, and we're playing the defense.
Keekly Winston, right? We talked about that Monday night game, that little chess match that went on the last 10 seconds before the ball snapped.
Sure.
I don't ever see that.
No.
The only thing I see is guys committing or showing their hand on the blitz too soon, then having to back out of it because the quarterback checks and says, whoa, they're getting ready to blitz, and then they're in no man's land, which I hate. I don't know what it is about this team, and I don't mean this 11 on the field this year, but going back probably to when Rondé was in his heyday and John Lynch was on the field, terribly timed blitzes are completely useless, right? I mean, if you don't time your blitz, not the play call itself, but the blitz. Rondé had such a knack for guessing that snap count, showing maybe I'm coming, maybe I'm not, but timing it just right.
Got to get home.
And I've seen guys looping way outside. I mean, you can't blitz from a safety position and try and go around the defensive end. We saw that with Greg Schiano's defense a little bit, with Raheem Morris's defense. Haven't seen it as much here, but sometimes, you know, they show their hand a little too early. And that's just a nuance that I think you can learn. But I think some guys are just more skilled at disguising when they're coming and not. Again, if you show the quarterback and the quarterback knows and he makes an adjustment and you still come, you're pretty much going to get blocked in that situation. Blitzes almost have to be an overwhelming, we're bringing the house, or you've got to surprise them. And this team does not surprise blitz very well.
Well, and it's interesting. Historically, the Bucs have not had good linebacker blitzes. Mm-hmm. Derek Brooks is an amazing linebacker, right? He wasn't particularly good.
No, he didn't have sack totals. No.
Barrett Rood, same thing. Beyond serviceable
right.
when he was at the proper playing weight before they told him to lose weight and he started getting run over. We've just never been good at that. Now, this team has trotted out.
You've got to go back to the late 70s, early 80s. Where you had the Batman Woods and
Hugh
Cecil
Green
Johnson
for a little
and
while.
Those guys,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're impact blitzing linebackers.
Now, this team will trot out from time to time something that looks almost Raven-esque, where they'll show a double A gap blitz. Mm-hmm. And when they fire that blitz, it works very
that's
well.
That's the blitz. I love the Jude off the corner and the safety around the other side in the San Francisco game, but that takes a long time to develop. But listen, we talk about this all the time. Point A to point B, where's the quickest way to get to the quarterback? And when you're talking about quarterbacks who can't move, like a Matt Ryan who tends to step up in the pocket, then you're blitzing directly. I mean, he's coming to you. He's bringing himself even closer at times if you've got a little bit of pressure from the outside.
Which is how McCoy got the sack fumble because right. Spence got the outside pressure, forced Matt Ryan to step up.
Right.
And McCoy hits him in the chops. Yep. There's the fumble.
Yeah, but I like your double A gap blitz. That's the way to go if I'm blitzing. But again, I'm up in the press box and – well, Mike Smith's in the press box, too, but he's in the coach's box.
Hey, ode to Steve White, because I do recall these same conversations last year. What was called peppering the A-gap or whatever we do in Lovey's defense. You'd show it, and then you'd back out of it, and then the damn cover two linebacker wouldn't get deep enough.
So. Yeah, and that's to your point, Mark. If you're going to show a blitz, but you're fainting, right? You're going to show it, and you can do that, right? Because you want the quarterback to adjust his protection, and then you want to bait him into a throw, right? And this is something we've talked about a little bit. We'll talk more about when we do a Chalk Talk show soon. The idea of baiting the quarterback into going to his hot, if your defense is on the same page, becomes very powerful. And this is hard. You got a rookie cornerback on one side. You got the rest of the secondary not playing particularly well together. And our linebackers seemingly incapable of playing pass defense. If you show a blitz and know what the hot should be, you roll the coverage under the hot, and that's when those big bang-bang plays happen.
Right.
That's what Rondé was so great at. That's what all of those guys were great at. Brian Kelly, when he was great at it, right?
We just don't have love that. Baiting, by the way.
I've heard that.
Yes.
At Starbucks, you can... No, that's an Idiocracy.
Right.
Oh, but we're there now. And he's back, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So we predicted a win. Mark, you and I, we were wrong. Chris predicted a loss 27-6.
I lost 20.
Shows what the hell you know.
Well, you know what? I was thinking about the Bucs scored. They get a touchdown. I'm like, well, there goes his prediction out the window.
He's out the window.
Dum-dum.
It's all right.
I'm knuck-knuck. He's dum-dum.
And there were a couple positives in the game, though. I mean, still, even though you're...
Yeah, Jameis trying to get a two-point meaningless conversion and almost... taking out both knees and his shoulder.
Well, now, hold on. Let me ask you a question. Do you have a problem with what Jameis did on that play?
I don't have a problem with what Jameis did. I have a problem that they're going for two in that situation. I mean, the game is essentially over.
Why don't they just forfeit?
Well, you can't.
Sure you can.
I mean, okay, when's the last time a team forfeited? I understand
that. No, but if you're going to show such lack of spine, why not just take it all the way? Don't risk getting injured.
We're talking about a team who declined a 15-yard penalty. I mean, you want to talk about spineless, you want to talk about some of the play calls from Dirk Cutter, who's essentially waved the white flag multiple times this year.
Oh, yeah?
Multiple times. What in the hell is your quarterback doing in there with 3 minutes left when you're down by 27 points, whatever it is, trying to get a two-point conversion? I just think it was absolutely stupid. Because they know Jameis is not going to not do that. Jameis said it again in his press conference Wednesday. We asked Dirk about it or actually Munkin about it, and he goes, we have multiple discussions about it. We asked Jameis about it. He goes, they talk to me every week about it, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do. He's not going to change that. So you know that this is a guy that's going to take a shot, not scared to take a shot. And he, you talk about a guy like Joe Holly that bounces back. Jameis, let's think about him getting his ankle rolled against Cleveland last year in the preseason. Injuries that put guys out for whatever reason, and even in college, he's got this weird flexibility, something, you know, physiology that you were talking about earlier.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, that and I'm probably jinxing him now. He's probably going to get an ACL this game. It'll be my fault.
Bite your tongue.
Well, I can't really jinx people. I don't believe that.
Leg strength in his ankles.
Claws, too. He doesn't have good claw strength because he fumbles a lot.
He does.
But I just thought that was just out of control. I don't know why you're asking me if I had a problem with him doing that, because that's what Jameis is going to do. That's what he did in college. It's probably what he did as Pee Wee. He's not going to change.
But
eventually one of these shots is going to take him out.
A lot of that doesn't bother – it didn't bother me that much at the end of this game. I mean, I'm watching the 49ers-Saints game, and Drew Brees in the end of the game, and that game's completely out of control, and they've got it, and he's still in there taking snaps at how old is 45 years old,
that's,
whatever he is right now.
That's what you do when you're the leader of the team.
Yeah, so –
you don't protect him. You don't put him in a case, and he'll be shiny for the next game.
Well, why not? They did after that. They took him out of the game.
Well,
because he was fine.
Because it was a gutless call.
What I'm saying is Mike Glennon comes in the game for two series after that. Why wasn't Jameis in there?
I understand. Because of what you just said. I'm not saying that Dirk made the right call. I think Dirk just got scared.
Right.
He didn't have the intestinal fortitude to stick with the right thing to do, which is let your general play.
Well, and here's the thing with Jameis. As we know, he will fight you tooth and nail. Jameis, and I don't know how much this has been talked about, after the game, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. No, not the craziest thing. I was in the press conference when Sam said 5-2. But this is a moment this is a moment that will be my 5-2 20 years from now if I live that long. After the game, Jameis got banged, came out of the game. Rick Stroud immediately peppers him with some questions, legitimate questions about his knee. Jameis being a little evasive, I'm fine. He goes, well, coach took you out of the game. He goes, I'm good. I'm fine. And, it was getting a little testy. Rick was doing the right thing. Jameis didn't want to talk about it. So the press conference goes on. Jameis walks down the steps from their little makeshift riser.
Sure.
Where the podium is. And if anybody's been in there, it's just a few steps down those steps out the door where he comes in and out of. Jameis stops halfway in between. Turns around to Rick Stroud, who's sitting in the front row on that side, on that right side. And he busts out this dance move. Right? Like he's a tap dancing Sammy Davis Jr. And he looks right at Rick Stroud. He goes, my knee look hurt now? And, we were just all like, are you kidding me? I can't believe we just witnessed this. And at first I was a little concerned. It was maybe the first crack we've seen of the frustration of losing from Jameis Winston. And then he said it to Rick again, do I look hurt? And it was just one of those, like, is this a Twilight Zone? I can't believe we're just seeing this. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal. But it was just such an odd situation. And Rick was like, hey, man, don't make it personal. Jameis was like, it's not personal. I followed Jameis out. He went and met with his brother like he does everything, hugged his family, went and signed autographs for the military people that were there. But nobody got it on film. Because, I'm recording some with my phone. But once the press conference is over, you turn everything off.
Right.
But it was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen in my life. Now, here's the unique thing that we love about Jameis. Yesterday, a Wednesday, his press conference, he walks into the thing, walks right up to Rick Stroud before he walks up to the podium, shakes his hand, says, hey, man, just want to make sure we're cool. Everything's cool. I wasn't trying to show you up or anything. And, and I'm sure the Buccaneers are probably not pleased with me disclosing the story. Joe Bucks fan had a little blurb about it right after the game. Again, nobody got it on video. But I was a little concerned. But then when I spoke to somebody in the organization later about that, they said, number one, he's frustrated that he lost. Number two, his family, they're freaking out, right? They're all like, oh, my God, are you okay? Are you okay? Everybody and everybody in the locker room is asking me if you're okay. And he's a tough guy. So, he may have been a little bit frustrated by that. But Jameis wasn't trying to be I think he was literally trying to prove a point, because he didn't want this question about if he was okay to continue to linger on. But anyway, it was just and I don't know, people might be like bored out of their skull with that story. But I just found it absolutely fascinating and interesting that that occurred. And again, we'll talk about it because we've continued to talk about it all week long, in the media room and stuff like that. And we still bring up the 5-2 every once in a while with Fred Goodall and some of those old timers that were there at the time, like Rick Stroud and all. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm glad that led to a lot of good information. I had not seen a game. I know there's a couple positives to take away from this game. I had not seen a game where Jameis Winston had started hot. And he started hot this game. I know he missed the long throw to Anton Smith, minus the fumble that he had. But the Bucs came out and scored 7 points. Didn't go back and run the date on this, but I don't recall them doing that.
Twice, because the one to Adam or was
to
it Cameron.
Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was probably the right
call.
He was
down.
But you know what? Buccaneers teams in the past or even this year at times.
That stops the drive.
That stops the drive. It turns into a field goal or a missed field goal. So I thought to myself when I saw that, and again, sorry to interrupt you, I thought, okay, maybe this is a game where they may have to match them score for score, but it looks like they're going to be able to do it.
And again, you can't say enough about Mike Evans is really now the main target that's out there. And I tweeted during the game at Derek a couple times. I'm like, I'm keeping track of yak for Mike because, damn it, he's fighting for yards after and didn't immediately go down, and he's trying to get additional yards. And you can't say enough about what he's doing.
The
this
guy's
season.
Playing with so much confidence right now.
It's ridiculous.
And again, we've talked about it. He still can be better.
Yeah. Back to the ceiling discussion, right? And I, you know, Steve White yelled at me about this last year when I was bitching about, you know, Mike's drops.
To be fair, Steve White always yells, so we don't know if he's mad or not.
That's true, but that's okay. So he would yell at me all the time about, you know, going after the drops. This game, what do you have, 150 yards on 11 catches or 8 catches and 11 targets, something like that? I don't know. He beasted a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
He was ridiculous. His routes were solid. The guy was all – there were times when he was open where even, you know, people like, he's fixating on Mike too much. Listen, he could have looked at Mike all night. It didn't matter who they had on him. They could have put a jacket on him. He wouldn't have been covered.
Right.
He was going to catch whatever you threw at him, except for the ones that he dropped, like the easy square in, like the drag route. And it's like, if he could just get that done, this guy changes the league.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He becomes the Julio. Not the same as Julio.
Right.
He's a different receiver than Julio. He's not going to be Julio. But who he is impressive. We were at the Super Fan Bash last night. We were talking, and someone asked a question about the touchdown pass or the conversion where he went up on the ladder. Jameis said it perfect. He's like, he had single coverage, right? If he's single, he's open. All I had to do was try to put at him, and he's going to go up and get it, and that's what he's done. So that's
what Dirk talked about this offseason, and Jameis and Mike talked about, you know what I mean, taking more shots when you get single coverage. Mike Evans only has one guy. Doesn't matter if it's his first target of the game or his 40th. You just keep throwing him the ball if it's single coverage because,
absolutely,
you know, I like the odds on that. And I thought his one-handed grab where he took a shot from Neal was
illegal...
as impressive as anything my son's favorite girlfriend, Odell Beckham Jr. III, has ever done. It was a hell of a catch.
It was a ridiculous catch. He was hit with a leading helmet to the bottom of the chin, no flag.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis was hit not once but twice in the helmet, helmet to helmet, no flags.
Right.
I have no problem if the NFL is going to establish a set of rules with regards to protecting players. I find the NFL's story about player safety to be disingenuous and crap, but at least enforce it. And I was going to ask Jameis last night about it. You know, how can you you wear a C on your chest, you get a chance to talk to the officials. Is Dirk talking to the officials? Cam is not the only one out there who's getting hit in a way that is not appropriate for the position. And I'll tell you what, we've got guys like Joe Hawley on this team. Right, you don't want to go far across the league. You watch what Sherman did to Dan Carpenter, and he's going to go ahead and say, well, I got the ball, so it's okay that I took his knee out. I'm going to tell you this right now. If you hit my kicker like that, your kicker's not walking off the field.
Well, Buccaneer players don't really like Aguayo, so they probably wouldn't stick up for him.
My point
I'm
is
just
still,
kidding. That's a joke, by the way.
Yeah, that's not insider info.
No.
But my point is the same, right? The NFL, if they continue to not take care of this, it will get taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way football works, right? Matt Ryan is not exactly fleet of foot. So if you keep hitting our franchise quarterback, rest assured, yours is going to get hit too.
Right.
Now let's.
But you know what? Let's open up a huge Pandora's box. Is that the right term?
You're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick not voting? Oh no.
Yeah.
We'll do that an hour too.
You know, Trump, Hillary. What are we going to do with those 24 unregulated delegate votes on December 19th? No. Is this team? Is there enough attitude on this team to be that we're going to go after? There's a couple guys we know, Hawley and Marpet, and Logan Mankins was kind of that guy last year. Is this team too nice? I mean, you say it's going to regulate itself. You know, who's going to it's just a question I have. I'm not saying
no. It's a good question.
You know?
It's a good question. We have a scholar as a head coach who I like.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good play caller. Even going back on all 22, this game plan was not bad.
Right.
I don't like this strange read option they've thrown in lately with the where he rides it on the hip.
Yeah.
We had one fumble off of it. We're not going to run with Jameis off that read option.
Right.
So just stop.
Right.
But in general, this is a good play caller. He's a good scheme designer. Mike Smith is a good scheme designer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disagree with you, right? Robert Ayers, when he's in there and healthy, is nasty.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play nasty. Clinton McDonald is nasty, but he's not out there.
Right.
Right. Gerald McCoy's not nasty. He plays really good football. And, you know, Chris and I were going back and forth on Twitter during the game about all this crap about Gerald, and we'll talk about that in an hour or two, too. He wasn't a ghost this week, right? He's not normally, for anyone keeping track.
Did anybody see my little thing that I put up about Gerald?
No.
On PewterReport.com, where this was Monday. They had a little short practice, you know, after they'd been off 3 days, and Gerald... You know, we were finishing up with Dirk. They had us actually have Dirk off the field. And while we were there, I had two other guys recording Dirk, so I didn't need to be in there. So I was just kind of listening to Dirk and looking around. And off a couple fields over, I see two D linemen and two or three offensive linemen getting together. This is 10 minutes after practice is over. Most of the players have already went in. And I look, and I don't have great eyesight, but I see number 93. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And it's Caleb Benenock. I believe it's Josh Allen. It's Noah Spence and Gerald. So I took my phone, zoomed in. The quality's not good, but I put it up on our YouTube channel, then embedded it in the little story, but just a little minute clip. But here's Gerald McCoy getting work in with Caleb Benenock and Josh Allen while he's also helping Noah Spence. It's two-on-two little things. Mm-hmm. You know, offensive lineman blocking, scraping, and then, you know, releasing, going to the next guy kind of a deal.
Sure.
Working on hand punch, those kind of things. And I'm thinking to myself, for all these, can I say it? Assholes.
Yeah, yeah, that's PG-13. That's fine.
Bashing Gerald. And, you know, I understand, again, we've talked about it. The $20 million could be spent elsewhere. If you want to debate that, that's fine. His dedication to this football team, who this guy played after his house was broken into right before the game.
And his dad was injured.
Yeah, the broken wrist now. And Dirk talked to him, said, hey, man, I understand if you're too rattled to play. And Gerald's like, I'm playing. But again, there's this narrative from a select few, and I made sure to point that out in the story. But my point was, doesn't matter, four-time Pro Bowler, doesn't matter, second team, you know, first team All-Pro. Unless this guy leads this Buccaneer team to an undefeated season, no points are scored against him, and he rescues 15 people in a riptide off St. Pete Beach, there's still going to be critics of this guy, and I just don't really understand it. But I tried to, and again, I'm not the kind of guy that's trying to prove points and, you know, Mr. Opinion, whatever. I just like to report it, let people think of it for themselves. But this one has irked me a little bit over the last few years, and it's gotten worse this year. So I put up the clip. It's on PewterReport.com. I talked to Akeem Spence. I talked to Caleb about it right after that, because they both said, you know, this guy – This isn't just this week, this practice. He does this all the time. 30 minutes before practice, he'll just take two or three guys. Let's go. I want to get better. I don't get as many reps in practice that I like, you know, because they don't, you know. So he does the extra work afterwards. But while he's doing the extra work for himself, he's also trying to tell a guy like Caleb Benenock, who doesn't get any reps in practice, right, because he's running scout team or he's standing watching. This gives you an opportunity. You know, and these guys appreciate it. Now, again, what is it equated to wins and loss wise? You can argue that money is wasted. Doesn't matter if he was there or nobody's here. They could still be, you know, 3-5 at this point without Gerald McCoy. That's a fair debate if you want to say it. But don't say the guy doesn't care, doesn't work hard. And again, people can go and kind of look and kind of see what Gerald is doing. And it's not a once a year.
Right.
Occasion.
They're wrong.
They're wrong.
Two quick points on that. And I know we touched on it last week with Gerald. In our explicit hour, you drafted young offensive linemen over the last how many years? The Bucs have been focused on Ali Marpet. It's key to have a guy like him. No offense to Devontae Lambert and Akeem Spence, but I'd rather have Ali Marpet and these young kids going against Gerald in practice versus those guys. But two, with Gerald, and I think I forgot my point with this, but I think fans should appreciate this time that they have with Gerald.
Sure.
Because there's no guarantee after next season that he's going to be in Tampa. And I'm not saying that the team's going to get rid of him, but if you look at the cap situation and how it frees up a lot of money if they decide to move on from Gerald, it sucks, and I hate it, and I joked with, kind of was a joke with Derek about it. I almost wish they would get rid of him, not to get nothing for him,
just
so he
people.
Didn't have to deal with this nonsense.
And I also went up to Gerald, after that practice too, after I talked to Caleb and he didn't want to go on the record on it because again, if he does it, then it looks like he's patting himself on the back. But, he says, look, and it's between him and I, and now it's between all of us. You know, he said, look,
there's your on the record.
I know this is off the record, but here we go.
I want to put it in perspective that it wasn't him coming to me saying, hey, write this, that I'm helping young guys. He doesn't care if anybody notices that. He does it for him and the young guys. And Akeem Spence said it. He said, listen, Devontae Lambert and Hughes and these guys that he worked with during training camp, say what you want about how they performed when they got in there. No one expected them to get in there. But they were better football players because Gerald McCoy took time 30 minutes before practice multiple times during training camp and in the preseason to work with him. And but Gerald was basically saying, look, he says, man, it's just, you know, the guys around me, if they're better, I'm better. And if I'm better, I can make them better. So, and he says, same thing with the offensive lineman. If Caleb's not getting the reps that, you know, to make him better, what's the harm of a spending 15 minutes after practice getting a few more in? Me telling him what to expect, what I would do in a certain situation.
Right. The extra, you know, practice helps, right? And you get it from an all-pro.
Yep.
So, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this. You guys know we're going to do a stop at the end of the first show. We're going to upload it. We're going to grab drinks at the restroom. You guys can do the same. And then we'll be back. We'll have the phone lines open, and we're going to have the water cooler version that you guys liked last week. Nuck Nuck is going to take the mic over from Mark so that Mark
if
doesn't get in trouble.
If he gets here, jeez Louise.
Yeah, I know. He's taking a long time. Let's turn our guns towards the Bears. This week, the Bears come to town. We'll have more Italian sausage than you can shake a stick at.
Sausage party?
Another one?
I'm in.
So we got the Bears coming in. Jay Cutler's back. If he can stop smoking long enough to play quarterback, the Bears are resurgent. And you know, Chris, this is one of the things we talked about. Alshon Jeffrey's coming in.
Yeah.
So we've got another big receiver that our secondary is going to have to take on. Now, Rick Hughes in the chat room just made a comment with no pressure from your front four. We're playing a lot of cushion and letting people catch the ball in front of us. Right, Mike Smith needs to answer why that's the scheme at some point. Could you ask that question, Mark?
I think I can without asking him. It's the chicken or the egg argument, right? You if you're not going to get pressure, you know what I mean, then you have to dial up blitzes. If you don't get there with the blitzes, guys are going to run behind you. So it's almost the Lovie Smith thing. Let's keep everything in front of us. Let's tighten up in the red zone. Let's try and hold them to three, those kind of things there. Because – and I'll say this. I talked to somebody upstairs this week, too, on Monday, as I was doing my Monday mailbag. And the number one thing that I've heard, and I've talked to a couple of players off the record, too, this week. The number one thing is, and it's real simple. We've all said it. The four in front can make the seven behind them look really bad. And,
sure.
And that's what's going on. They have got to find a way to generate more pressure. Mike said it today. The person I've talked to upstairs said it just boils down. Look, Conte, McDougal have not had great years. There's no mystery that they've struggled. But it's been made to look worse because of the fact they aren't able to get pressure on the quarterback. And the organization understands that. And the organization tried. They've tried. Number one, they tried to upgrade the safety position in free agency. They tried like hell to bring some other defensive ends and some guys in the last couple years in free agency. And just had, I mean, again, people assume just because you have the most money, you can sign anybody you want. Players still have the choice. They have offered more money to guys over the last couple years who chose to go to other places.
I can assure you that is a story we should break about all the guys they offer more money to, because that will speak to whether other players don't see Tampa as a place they want to come play, despite the fact there's not a state income tax, despite right. the fact that they were offered more money, would lose less in taxes, they have a great facility down here, et cetera. Why is it they don't want to come play here? And that becomes a really interesting question.
I had a conversation with an NFL player in the offseason.
Sabby Piscatelli.
No, it wasn't Sabby. Oh. Plays for another NFL franchise, knows a scout for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who kind of hit him up and talked to him and said, "No, as a veteran, the no guaranteed money coming down is a big detractor for these veteran free agents. The signing bonus.
What the Buccaneers are doing, but more teams are going to this now, too, is they're splitting the signing bonus up into guaranteed money the first 2 years. And I got this from an agent who said, the organization is, I can't remember the right term. Derek, you're more of a financial guy. Not cash poor, liquid rich, or something along those lines. The Glazers obviously have more money than God. Now, do they have a vault at one Buccaneer place with $100 million stacked in small bills? You know, no, necessarily. So teams, again, because here's the deal, though. When you offer a $20 million, split it up over, you know, say you split it up over 2 years, that's your guaranteed money. You've got to set aside that guaranteed money somewhere. You can't just say, well, we'll come up with it next year. We'll give you your other 10 next year. It has to be allocated. But the Buccaneers aren't necessarily saying, here's $20 million to sign on the right. on the dotted line. And but see, that's kind of their business model that started with Mark Dominic and Mike Greenberg. And other teams are kind of starting to do that. But there are still teams out there willing to write you that $20 million check the day that you sign your contract. And the thing is, it's the same thing, essentially. And if you're a football player and you're not good with your money, why not? Why would
it's
you?
It's absolutely. It's the same reason why you take your lottery money up front, even though you lose another half.
Yeah.
Cash. It's cost of capital. It's. I want my money now.
Right.
Now the point you brought up, and we should split this to another show because we should talk about the Bears and get this thing done, and then do our water cooler. But the contract structures are really interesting, and if there's an innuendo that the Buccaneers are not liquid enough to have the capital to put aside in whatever escrow equivalent they need to write those contracts. And it's not a matter of choice because it could be either, right? And I get the feeling it's probably a matter of choice, not a matter of capital.
Right,
they
seem
to have plenty of cash.
Again, this let me just say this. This agent didn't specifically say the Buccaneers. He offered it as a reason.
This
is a guy who had players with the Buccaneers.
Sure.
So he said that, you know, that's why a lot, you know, some teams are going to this model as opposed to...
And in his defense, as the agent, he's not going to know the why. He's going to know the what.
Yes.
Right. No, we will not give you your $20 million up front. We will structure it in 2 years guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Right. And he may be thinking, well, why wouldn't you? Right. Mm-hmm. And the why wouldn't you is because that's not what we want to do. Right. And we may have an out clause. We may have an injury clause.
Right.
We're only paying 50% of that guarantee. It's not truly guaranteed.
Yeah. There's so many more aspects of the contract besides just the dollar amount.
Absolutely.
I mean, how much of it is guaranteed? You know, what are the... You know, is it all backloaded? You know what I mean? All of those things, too. So
absolutely.
The way they set it up. But I'll say this. Mike Greenberg, the Bucs capologist, listen, the Buccaneers, last I saw, $59 million going in next year, most of the NFL. You know, they've done well because we remember the Rich McKay, Bruce Allen kind of years where towards the end, well, definitely the Bruce Allen years where there was some salary cap issues.
Well, Bruce Allen, and let's be fair, and we don't need to make this history lesson, but Bruce Allen... inherited the banking on the future that Rich McKay did.
Right.
Rich McKay gets a lot of credit, and he should. He architected a hell of a team that went on to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But by doing that, he leveraged the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then Bruce had to clean it up.
Right.
Bruce comes in, cleans it up. We get our teeth kicked in for a number of years, and then they get broomed out.
Right.
Now we get all this cap move. But at any rate, let's talk about the Bears. We talked briefly, Alshon Jeffries, running back who no one knows, taking the place of Matt Forte.
Jordan Howard.
Right. Like I said, no one knows.
Sure.
But he's not Jay Ajayi, right? I mean,
no.
We're not talking about the Dolphins' resurgent running back. This is a defense who's not getting takeaways anymore, but they did just beat the Minnesota Vikings. Now, newsflash, Minnesota Vikings aren't the Minnesota Vikings that started the year. You said something interesting, Chris, off air earlier, that there is a rumor floating that the Bears are going to tank because they know they have so many needs, they're looking for a draft. They know they don't have a chance to compete this year. What do you expect to see out of the Bears this Sunday at Raymond James, and will the Bucs get a home victory?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think someone in the chat room is following at BBP. It's not me. Is it me? It's me. I apologize. I have my media.
Sorry. Chris's tablet's playing music.
I'm
my God, this is the problem with these rookies.
I'm on a Bears website. Sorry. if you follow at BBB Chris, I know someone mentioned it here in the chat room. The Bears are 0-4 on the road. The Bucks are 0-4 at home, so something's got to give this weekend.
That's not true.
Someone's going to win.
That's not true.
What?
Well, there could be a tie.
Could be a
We've
tie.
We've seen it too much. We almost saw it a couple weeks
Would
ago.
Would not shock
Listen,
me.
When Nuck-Nuck comes, he's going to whoop your ass for that.
Nuck-Nuck hates ties.
I'm going to tell you right
now.
He
does not kiss his sister.
I'm going to tell you right now. That could be potential this week because the Bears don't score a lot of points. They're 31st in the league, 16-point whatever it is per game. The Bucks.
Well, smoking Jay Cutler is back and healthy right now.
Most importantly, Kristen Cavallari is back. Okay,
if she'll sit in West Club because Kim Kardashian sit over by
no,
me.
No,
oh, really?
No, no, she's going to be in the Pewter Report suite.
There you go. He got that idea from me. Follow
me.
That's
right.
At
that was
BBP
you.
Chris. Thanks for giving me the credit. You're like other people.
Like other people that don't give you credit.
Damn it. So no, I expect a very similar. It's funny because I went back. I used to have a podcast. It was pretty good. I went back and listened to
Award-winning
Bucks Brief podcast episode 70 that featured Scott Reynolds from PewterReport.com.
His boss.
And I talked about a lot of the
who is a boss.
A lot of the talk at that time of the season when the Bucks were struggling and specifically offensively. Offense completely blew that game against the Bears. A very winnable game. Defense actually didn't play too poorly in that game. I'm kind of expecting the same in this game. I don't know. You know, offensively, again, we'll see if Doug is back. I think there might be a back and forth. It's going to come down, in my opinion, to turnovers, takeaways, if you want to call them that.
I don't know what this means.
Hold on.
Oh,
and kicking.
It's going to come down to kicking?
Aguayo versus Connor Barth. Get
bum,
ready.
Bum, bum, bum,
a 78% kicker versus a 58% kicker, whatever he is right now. So get ready.
Six combined misses, is what you're telling me?
Yeah. Only from 40 to 49 they're going to miss. Right. Everything.
What do you mean?
Connor will hit
Aguayo has shown he can miss extra points.
I was trying to be nice to him today.
Yeah, he has.
Oh, Jesus. Listen, when's his hammy going to get pulled?
You want my prediction already for this game?
Yes, I want your prediction. You let in. Let's do it.
Let's do 17-16 bucks.
Good Lord.
I want to say tie. If you want me to call tie, I'll call tie. 17-17.
Dude, call tie. I mean, and anyone in the chat room or anyone who listens to this podcast, right? Anyone who can put a bet in on Vegas for a tie. I don't know what the prop bet is for a tie, but you're going to have to get paid off.
If there's a game that it could potentially happen, it's this game.
I'll go 100 if they tie. I'm not even betting. I'm just telling you, I'll pay you $100 if they tie.
There it is. That's Mark
Cook.
You're
going to pay 100, Derek? You in?
I'm in.
Right, we're going to split it 50-50. You're going to get ahead our bucks next week if they tie.
I just
checked my bank statement. Yeah, 50 I can do.
Two teams whose offenses are not playing well, and if it comes down to a kicking game, you've got a less than 80% kicker and a less than 60% kicker going against each other, trying to kick a game-winning field goal. If there's a game that could potentially be a tie,
it's
this one.
Well,
now, I know you just loaded a dip up, and it's hard to talk when you get all that crap in your mouth.
It's not. I've had one in the whole time.
Well, I just love it. The podcast. We went Polk County all the way there with Mark packing his dip on the mic. It was beautiful.
Y'all are drinking beer out of glasses.
We're drinking Tito's and Sprite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so what's your prediction for this week?
Let me say this. I don't know what this means. I will just say I saw a bounce in Jameis Winston's step like he had just, won the lottery. And it was weird Monday. It was weird this week. He just seemed energized. And I don't know what that means. It probably means nothing for the game moving forward. But it's just a different vibe right now.
So what you're saying is Bucks fans should thank Rick Stroud if Jameis comes out and has the game of his career.
He's going to have a big game this week.
What are you going to predict? Well, so is he going to be your offensive MVP?
Absolutely. 31-17, Buccaneers.
Yeah, Mike Evans should have a field day this week against these corners.
So Evans is your guy. Offensively.
And you can go Mike Evans every week. Just put me down through the rest of the year.
We might as well. And because we've all shied away because we don't want to be too cliche.
Absolutely.
And yet, I don't know if any of us picked Mike last week. Maybe you did.
We
should have.
We picked Jameis. He picked Mike.
I mean, we should have. He's just out of control right now.
Derek books me, to be accurate.
He's such a nice guy and such a humble, good dude, too.
I got no issue with Mike. I've always liked him since I met him as a rookie. The guy balls. He's tremendous. I think the Evans pick is a great pick. I don't disagree with you. I saw Jameis last night, but I don't know that Jameis doesn't always look like that.
No, I can tell you he doesn't.
You can tell me he doesn't.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's a complete – he's always positive, but he just has had – I don't know. Something good has happened in this guy's life. Maybe the 3 days off did him some good. I don't know.
Here's the pick from me.
Maybe he's a Trump fan.
I'm going to go off the script.
Dotson voted for Trump, by the way.
I saw the article. It was really insightful. No, it wasn't.
We didn't write it.
I know that.
He's not well-liked by a few of his teammates right now.
I am going to make America great again. Cam Brate was open all game long.
He was my guy last week.
I know he was.
I was like, geez.
He literally was open all game long. And that I'm not jumping Jameis because he was throwing to he was making decent throws. He wasn't trying to force it to Mike, despite what some people would say. He was throwing to Mike when he had the advantage. But if I'm Jameis, I'm going to get to learn where Cam Brate goes because no one's covering him, right? Just throw the ball to him. He catches everything near him. Cam Brate is the difference in this game. Mike will have a great game, of course. Cam Brate becomes the second guy, but he's the guy who's going to score some touchdowns. He tied for the league lead in touchdowns for tight ends, I think.
I think with, what has he got,
four? Right? Would have had five with that when they properly called. They didn't steal from him. But at any rate, I think Cam Brate's my guy on offense. And I do predict the Bucks are going to win. Listen, I'm going to keep predicting the Bucks win every week. I know that. It's not fun. I'm not going to be the guy listed to bet for. I want the 31-17 score so badly because I want the Bucks to run away. I want to feel that again. I want to know what it's like to watch a victory and just watch us pounding someone into the dirt. I'm going to go with the same exact score as Mark, 31-17 Bucks. Nice. Who's your defensive pick? Who's going to show up on defense, Chris?
I'm going Gerald, but keep an eye on Noah Spence this game.
I think Robert Ayers is going to. I think he's getting a little bit better, a little bit healthier. I talked to him briefly today, just nothing in major. We just chatted, and he called me Alan Cross's dad again. So, I'm going with Ayers. I think Ayers is going to have an opportunity to make an impact. Two sacks from Robert Ayers.
I just want to say the last time that Mark had a conversation with a player and predicted them as MVP prior to a game, that guy got arrested and shipped off to the New York Jets.
It happens.
Just want to say that.
It happens. It occasionally happens.
I love the idea of Robert Ayers playing because I think he's one of those guys that I wanted to be the missing piece, and I think he can be. I agree. I think he's playing hurt. He's not got the explosion that he had before. I love the idea of Noah Spence being impactful, but Noah Spence, a one-trick pony still. He's just not big enough to do anything other than that edge rush, and we're not able to incorporate enough of that. What I'm hoping against hope. Now, is Quan up? I know he had a shoulder injury.
He's fine.
He's fine. Okay. Yeah. I'm hoping that the linebackers pull their heads out of their asses and can play well. Because until they do, everyone else is screwed, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to keep picking linebackers, and I'm just going to randomly pick them until they do something
well. You're
going
to go with Darius Glanton this
week? That's what I was going to ask.
The mighty Darius Glanton.
Out of Polk County, Lake Gibson High School.
The mighty Braves, who were undefeated this year in Polk County play.
15 plays, had 6 tackles. Yeah. In mop-up duty, but still.
You know, we should be starting Mike Glennon, right? The Mike Glennon mobs.
Anyway. Oh, yeah, 11 out of 12, absolutely. Whatever it was, sure.
Sure. No, I'm going to go with Quan Alexander. I need Quan to realize what he is. Levante could certainly have that kind of a game, but the reality situation is one of these athletic linebackers has got to step up. And I don't care whether it's in coverage, underneath, tip the ball, and I'm going to give them credit. If they tip the ball and Hargraves or Grimes or McDougal or, God forbid, Conti makes a pick, I'm still giving them the credit. That linebacker position, that second level has got to develop. It's got to show up. Someone has to step up and be the damn leader. It was supposed to be Quan. It hasn't been.
You know what's hurt this team to a degree is the fact that Darryl Smith isn't on the field a lot. And earlier in the year, to me, he always looked very slow. But as far as consistently being in the right place, he has been on his limited snaps because, you know, he comes off the field in nickel. But there's no, it's no coincidence. However, he's also a 12-year veteran, whatever he is. You know what I mean? And he understands those things. He's limited athletically because of the fact that he's not 25 anymore. But as far as being in the right place, I think the last few weeks when he's been on the field, I from what I've seen, he's been where he's supposed to be. And hopefully that rubs off a little bit on Quan and Levante, because that was one of the reasons he was brought here. Not just because they had a need at Sam, but because of the fact that he is supposed to be that leader, that film guy, you know what I mean? That guy to, you know, kind of teach these young linebackers, and he just hasn't shown up yet.
He was on the field 44 out of 70 plays.
Was he?
Yeah. We were in base.
Oh, well, but he also shifted over when Quan went, right? He plays Mike when Quan goes down.
They had Glanton in it, Mike.
Did they?
Glanton played 14 snaps.
Yeah. 14 with six tackles.
But at any rate, all right, so those are our predictions. Those are our offensive, defensive MVPs. I want to thank Mark Cook from PewterReport.com. We got Scott's Fab 5 coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, Scott will have a good Fab tomorrow. I'll be doing my fifth down.
Oh, yeah.
With this week, I got DeMar Dotson. And if you don't know DeMar, then you're not a real Bucks fan. But the guy is quite the character. I thought he had the best 5 answers or most entertaining answers for this. And it's a off-the-field, no football kind of deal. I'm figuring by Friday, Saturday, when I put this thing up, people are, you know, X and O'd out. They just want to see football.
It's already been analyzed.
It's fluff
at that
crap.
Point.
But anyway.
It's good stuff.
It'll be out later tomorrow. And, well, how can it be later tomorrow? Tomorrow is later. Is that an oxymoron?
I understood later what you tomorrow. Mean. Everyone understood what you meant.
Well, but you tend to correct these things. I will say on your Facebook post, you said reeked of earlier, and I was convinced that you misused or misspelled the word reeked. So I copied and pasted it, and I dropped it in my browser, and I looked it up, and you did use it correctly. I was thinking more reeked as far as R-E-E-K-E-D, but you did the W-R-E-A-K-E-D. So very good, by the way.
Thank you.
I thought I was finally going to be able to bust you on a grammar thing, and I couldn't.
It happens.
I tried.
Especially when I'm emotional, and I have been emotional this week.
I'm glad that I did the look up, because if I would have
rest assured, if
you
had busted me and been wrong, you would never have heard the end of it.
Yeah, especially in the mood that you've been in this week.
I have not been in the best of moods. All right. Well, listen, I want to thank you, Mark Cook from PewterReport.com. I want to thank Chris as well for joining Stage 1. Hey,
I think Nuck-Nuck's here. Yeah.
Nuck-Nuck's here. All right, you guys.
Sweet. I can get out of here.
Grab your drinks. Go get a drink. Go use the bathroom. We're going to stop, upload this one. It'll take
us
a couple minutes.
Holy crap. Nuck-Nuck's not wearing pants.
Oh, put some pants on, Nuck-Nuck.
Pervert.
We'll upload this. We'll be right back for the No Holds Barred show. The phone number is 813-964-7364. If you want to participate in the show, you can do so.
Hang on, Chris. I'll come in there and we'll cross swords.
That is so awkward. All right, guys. We will see you guys very, very soon.